is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening, Africa, and welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jason Patinkin, and here's what's coming up.
A government losing control of the more remote areas of the country of Chad, eventually even under siege in the capital, would make Chad to a main risk for the whole region, even more than Libya because of its central location.
That was Wolfgang Pozsai, former Austrian military attaché to Libya. He was talking about the challenges that Chad's government faces in dealing with rebels blamed for the president's death. This story and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Chad's military government says it will not negotiate with rebels who are blamed for killing the president last week. That raises concerns that the rebels may press ahead with threats to attack the capital, N'Djamena. A spokesman for the rebel group, which is known as the Front for Change and Concord in Chad, or FACT, said it's joining forces with other armed groups who oppose the new government of late President Idriss Déby's son. His son was appointed leader of a military council that claimed control of the country following the elder Déby's death. Wolfgang Pozsai is a former Austrian military attaché to Libya. He spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the challenges facing Chad's new military government.
Actually, it is a fact that not only in the military, but also in the parliament, not everyone is happy with the decision to establish a military council. But for the time being, especially as the elite troops remain loyal, the young Déby will remain in charge. Nevertheless, to maintain the cohesion of the army is critical or maybe even a weak point for him. The fact is already an alliance of several rebel groups, mainly from the Mahdi tribe and from the Toubou, but also, and this is remarkable, from Déby's Tsagaba tribe. And it could well be that other rebel organizations, like the CCMSR, we've mentioned them before, they are also an umbrella organization, could eventually join them. Part of the CCMS militias or rebel groups started as offshoots from FACT. But nevertheless, FACT is not the only one problem for Déby's son. The most dangerous is probably Boko Haram. They are operating in the south of the country in the Greater Lake Chad area. And I would say altogether, it will be crucial for Mohamed Déby to reach out successfully to the most important tribal leaders, especially to those from his own Tsagaba tribe, who are also firmly established in the military establishment. And if he is successful in this outreach, this will also help him to keep the army together and to stay on with his military council.
A UN official said that even at the height of the Libyan war, the Chadian rebels had always intended to go back to Chad. They talked about gathering as many weapons as they could and going back to Chad. How could their return impact stability in Chad and the Chadian role in combating militant Islamic movements across Western and Central Africa?
This is the key problem for the region. A government losing control of the more remote areas of the country of Chad, eventually even under siege in the capital, would make Chad to a main risk for the whole region, even more than Libya because of its central location. And this could eventually force Mohamed Déby to withdraw also his troops from peacekeeping operations in Mali, Operation MINUSMA. There are 1,400 troops there. Doesn't sound too much, but they are providing the backbone of the very dangerous sector north in Mali. They've suffered in the last 8 years already 42 people killed. Forces from Chad also intervened since 2011, together with local forces and with the local governments and at times also with the French, against terrorist groups in the Central African Republic, in Niger and in Nigeria. This was always very important for keeping the terrorist groups under control. So one could say Déby's Chad was a backbone in the fight against terrorism in Southern Sahara area. And now it could well be that Chad will become the next victim of Libya's civil war.
That was Wolfgang Pozsai, a former Austrian military attaché to Libya, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. Staying with Chad, trade between Chad and neighbor Cameroon has come to a virtual standstill, with Chad refusing entry to hundreds of trucks carrying essential supplies headed for its capital, N'Djamena. Chad is landlocked. Chadian military authorities sealed the border last week after the death of President Idriss Déby amid threats from armed rebels. Journalist Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the Cameroon border town of Kosseri.
Hundreds of trucks with goods meant for Chad's capital, N'Djamena, are sitting idle in Kosseri, a town on Cameroon's northern border with Chad. Another long line of trucks sits and waits on Chadian side of the border. Only a few vehicles said to be transporting humanitarian aid and hospital equipment are being given access to N'Djamena by Chad's border security men. Cameroon's Ministry of Transport says at least 700 trucks bound for Chad's capital have been asked to delay their trips. Nana Saini transports rice from Cameroon's coastal city of Douala to N'Djamena. He says movement between Kusseri and N'Djamena has been halted for about a week now.
Le décès du président Chadien, que nous appelons ici Midi,
he says traders have been in pain and consternation since last week's death of Idriss Déby. When Déby was alive, he says movement between Kusseri in northern Cameroon and Chad's capital was very fluid and business was thriving. He says Déby's death has brought enormous economic setbacks that may grow worse if the new government in Chad fails to open the border. Landlocked Chad relies on Cameroon for 80% of its imports, while Cameroon buys food staples such as sorghum, onions, and groundnuts from Chad. Zachary Roger Mbarga is a researcher in regional integration and free trade in Central Africa. The University of Yaoundé researcher says Chad's military council is preoccupied over the security of the capital. He spoke via telephone from Douala. He says by closing the border, Chad's transitional military council is indicating that its immediate preoccupation is to stop rebels from advancing towards N'Djamena. He says the council wants to secure N'Djamena for the 18 months before examining if it can hand Chad to civilian rule. He says the border closure is already stifling economic liberty and the free movement of people and goods, which are not good signs for a country where people live in poverty. Marsa Success is a Chadian opposition leader. He says security will be threatened in Chad until the transitional military council created after Déby's death hands power to civilians. Marsa spoke by telephone from Chad. He says it is high time Chad's military, the civil society and the rebels meet at a dialogue table and immediately hand power to civilian rule. He says Chadians are angry that after Déby's 30 years in power, the military unconstitutionally decided to hand Chad to General Mahamat Idriss Déby, the 37-year-old son of the former leader. He says a majority of Chad citizens are disgruntled with the confiscation of power by Déby and his family. He says civilians are ready to sacrifice to free their country, even if they go hungry because of the border closure. On Sunday, Chad's ruling military council, in a statement read on state TV, said it will not negotiate with rebels whom they accuse of killing Déby. The military said Mahamat Mahdi Ali, the leader of the rebels, known as the Front for Change and Concord in Chad, had fled into Niger and asked its neighbor to help track Ali down. The council has promised to fully reopen the border in the days ahead if the security situation improves. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Kusseri, Northern Cameroon.
In Somalia, the Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein Roble has called for calm and dialogue after overnight clashes in the capital between backers and opponents of President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, known as Farmajo. Analysts worry that the political standoff over Somalia's parliament's term extension for Farmajo could escalate armed conflict. Mohamed Kahiye reports from Mogadishu.
Roble says he was saddened by overnight violence in the capital, Mogadishu, between the government security agencies and forces from the opposition. He added that dialogue and understanding are the only ways to resolve the stalemate. Clashes were reported at the home of opposition Wadajir party leader Abdulrahman Abishakur and at the home of former President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud. The former president is among those who oppose Farmajo's term extension. Somali opposition leaders have blamed Farmajo and security forces for the fighting, but Security Minister Hassan Hundube denies the accusations and blames the opposition. The crisis is related to delayed elections. Somalia's parliamentary and presidential elections have been held up for months because of disputes over the electoral process. The stalemate took a new turn this month after the lower house of parliament voted to extend the mandate of President Farmajo's government for 2 years. Opposition lawmakers who were already against Farmajo staying in office strongly rejected the move, as the international community also warned against its effect on Somalia's stability. Mohamed Hassan Idris, a member of opposition party, says the government is not ready for dialogue due to its actions regarding the violence in the capital.
His appreciation of the operation by the security forces, clarifying that he isn't calling to calm the situation, instead he's encouraging the ongoing illegal operation that aimed to secure the unconstitutional extension.
The African Union last week urged Somali leaders to resume the election talks, rejecting the extension of Farmajo's mandate. Its envoy is expected to visit Somalia in the next coming weeks. Afiyare Elmi is the Associate Professor of Security Studies at Qatar University. He says dialogue is the only way out to avoid the armed clashes seen in Mogadishu on Sunday.
I think there is only one way out of the situation at the moment, and that is to go back to the negotiating table and resolve the political conflict and the election issues that have triggered the violence in the first place.
The UN office in Somalia urges maximum restraint by all parties, while calling on all sides to immediately resume dialogue. Mohamed Kahiye for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
French energy corporation Total has suspended operations at its $20 billion liquefied natural gas project in Mozambique. Total said today it has withdrawn all staff after Islamist extremists attacked the coastal city of Palma near the gas projects in Cabo Delgado province. Total also said it had declared a force majeure situation, meaning that conditions were beyond its control. The legal concept means it can suspend fulfilling contractual obligations. The Cabo Delgado region of Mozambique has been hit repeatedly by militant attacks, and the attack on Palma in March left dozens dead and displaced thousands of people. Craig Foster, who came up with the concept of My Octopus Teacher, says he hopes the movie will draw attention and protection for the Great African Sea Forest. He spoke in a video statement released after the production became the first nature film to win the Oscar for Best Documentary since 2010. In the film, he's shown meeting and slowly but steadily befriending an octopus, despite the differences of language, experience, and environment. Here's a report from Cape Town, where the movie was made.
It's a hard thing to explain, but sometimes you just get a feeling and you know there's something to this creature that's very unusual. There's something to learn here. There's something special about her. And then I had this crazy idea, what happens if I just went every day? What happens if I never missed a day?
Foster's crazy idea of tracking the octopus while free diving every day for over a year paid off.
My octopus teacher, Foster,
who worked on the movie for 10 years and struggled to find funds to finish it before Netflix got involved, says he's grateful for the Academy's recognition.
I'm so deeply honored that our film has won this extraordinary award. What's so exciting is that this is the first South African film to win this award. And it really puts the Great African Sea Forest on this global platform in a way that hasn't been recognized before. And that really gives it the chance of the protection it so desperately needs.
Foster thanked his fellow filmmakers, including directors Pippa Ehrlich and James Reed, who attended the awards ceremony in Los Angeles while he's away on location working on another project.
If there ever was a film that was made by a team, this is it. It's a real hive mind, a group of dedicated people from South Africa and all parts of the world who've put their hearts and souls into making this film. And this award and this exposure will go a long way to warming the human heart to the incredible wonders of our natural system and how critical they are for our human survival.
My Octopus Teacher beat The Mole Agent from Chile, The Collective from Romania, Crip Camp from the US, and Time, also from the US, for the top prize. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
Also in South Africa, former President Jacob Zuma's legal team has resigned just 3 weeks before Zuma is expected to go on trial for corruption. With no one currently representing him, the proceedings are likely to be delayed yet again. Zuma allegedly orchestrated the plunder of billions of dollars from state enterprises while he ran the country between 2009 and 2018. Darren Taylor reports.
Ever since the early 1990s, Zuma benefited from regular so-called donations from benefactors, including two Indian businessmen, AJ and Atul Gupta. When the veteran member of the ruling African National Congress was tried for rape in 2006, the Gupta brothers helped fund his successful defense. When Zuma became president in 2009, the Gupta brothers' rise to the top of a list of people awarded massive government contracts was immediate. Together with Zuma, the Guptas allegedly stole billions of dollars from state-owned enterprises during his 9 years in power. Unlike Zuma, the brothers have yet to be charged with any crime. The former president's supposed to go on trial on 17 May to face charges including racketeering, fraud, and money laundering. But now, says legal analyst Benedict Piri, Zuma's lawyers seem to have joined the list of people leaving him in the lurch.
You usually see attorneys withdraw, for instance, where fees are not paid. Sometimes attorneys withdraw if the client has a totally different strategy in place and does not agree with the attorney on the way the matter should be handled. Sometimes, you know, attorneys withdraw because the client effectively has instructions that are contrary, for instance, to ethical rules or how the attorney thinks the matter should
be. Piri says Zuma's trial will likely be delayed now that he has no lawyers.
It does seem like a fairly big and complicated matter, which would require quite some substantial time to get under. You know, their witnesses, their witness statements to check. The framework and the timing will really be fashioned by the court, given the complexity in the matter and the amount of time that would be required to get up to speed.
Other legal minds have suggested that the withdrawal of Zuma's legal team is yet another tactic by the former president to disrupt the case against him. Spokesman for South Africa's National Prosecutions Authority, Sipho Ngwema, says it'll be very disappointing if this happens.
If there are issues that emanate from the side of the defense team must worry about those things. On our side, we want to start. Of course, we know that a lot of people have been trying to insinuate that the delays were on our side. We want the matter to start as soon as possible. We are ready.
But now that Zuma no longer has access to honeypots of public money, the Guptas, as well as most of his former sponsors, have disappeared, and his bank accounts are said to be much emptier than ever before. In these circumstances, state prosecutors are concerned that Zuma's also going to argue that he simply doesn't have the financial means to defend himself properly. It's an argument that Zuma's likely to make, says lawyer Mpumulelo Zikalala.
And you look at the number of days in which the matter has been set, it can easily set you back probably between, let's say, 15 and 20,000 rands per day.
The courts previously ruled that Zuma's responsible for his legal fees.
definitely would need definitely a sponsor, because even legal aid would not be able to come in these circumstances, because even legal aid has a certain criteria in which one has to qualify. So it is not a free-for-all type of...
Zikalala says it's unlikely that a person of the former president's status would qualify for legal aid. As for finding someone to bankroll a new legal team, that's also highly improbable, because Zuma's on the precipice of political oblivion. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
In Nigeria, Islamist extremists ambushed a government military convoy, killing at least 30 soldiers, the French news agency AFP has reported. AFP says military sources today confirmed the attack in Borno State in northeastern Nigeria. It reports that fighters from what's called the Islamic State West Africa province attacked the convoy with rocket-propelled grenades yesterday near the town of Minok. The convoy was carrying weapons, and AFP said its military sources report the attackers made off with many of the arms. In Burkina Faso, more than 1.5 million children under 5 are facing malnutrition. That's according to the Save the Children charity group. Violence in the country has displaced hundreds of thousands of people, worsening the plight of children. The eastern and central northern regions of Burkina Faso are among the worst affected, as 670,000 children and their families have had to flee their homes. Mavis Okere in Dwaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana has more.
Hubert Watrago, Children's Communication and Advocacy Director for Save the Children, says the situation was already there as the number of malnourished children has increased. He says more funding needs to be invested to alleviate malnutrition, to implement programs and policies that will have more impact on children. The World Food Programme says nearly 18 million people are facing insufficient food consumption in Burkina Faso, and nearly half of these are children. Watrago says the violence in the country is worsening their plight. He says more than 1 million people have been forced to flee their villages and homes. And what is alarming is that over 61% of these are children.
Since the beginning of the conflict in some areas, children's rights are in danger of being rolled back. For example, in terms of protection, children are no longer in safe environments when they are forced to flee with their parents. Specifically, their right to education is jeopardized.
He says currently more than 2,200 schools have been closed, affecting more than 300,000 children. Trago says the insecurity in rural areas means that many families cannot work in their fields or keep their animals because they fear being attacked or recruited by armed groups. He says many adolescents and men cannot work if that involves traveling beyond their communities, and this has left many households reliant on humanitarian support.
Over the past year, Save the Children has been able to provide support to more than 170,000 children, including those living in displacement camps. Among their children, some were already malnourished. And to address this, Save the Children, for example, put in place what we call babies-friendly spaces, where mothers received advices and support to care their babies.
He says only about $3 million out of just $46 million needed for nutrition-related issues have been secured, leaving a huge funding gap. Retrago says 3.5 million people are in need of urgent humanitarian assistance this year.
Save the Children is calling on the government and the international community to continue to put all the effort to urgently respond to the situation in Burkina Faso to save a generation of children at risk. Specifically, Save the Children is asking to prioritize the specific nutritional needs of children in humanitarian response so that no child under 5 dies of preventable causes. This includes providing sufficient food toward nutrition.
Hubert Watrago says improved nutrition services, including measures to prevent hunger and malnutrition, are urgently needed to assist children in hard-to-reach areas. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Oshry in Dwaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, please visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, McBeal Yabarro, and our editors, Paul Alexander and Kate Pound Dawson, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.